thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining this broadcast, we're listening to the great Vice President Al Gore talk about his book, The Future, Six Drivers of Global Change, in which he outlines the six major factors compelling progress around the world. He is a co-recipient of the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize.
Ladies and gentlemen, we need to reclaim the integrity of our democracy. We need to overturn Citizens United. Corporations are not people. You know that. We all know that. We need to require that these people making anonymous contributions disclose who they are so that we can see what they're trying to influence them to do. And it's an important and urgent matter. A lot is at stake. Now, I'm hopeful because just as we've gone from the printing press to the television age, we are now seeing the emergence of the internet age. And even though it's still in its infancy and television is still dominant, we're already seeing individual bloggers affect the course of debate. We're seeing young people use the internet to get more involved in their communities than any previous generation. So we've got some good and positive developments that are going to help us. They're putting wind in our sails. But we the people, as the president reminded us the other day at his inauguration, we the people have the main responsibility for doing this. Now, let me move on because I'm going to run out of time. Chapter 4 is entitled Outgrowth. And we're growing. Our civilization is growing. The Earth, Inc. is growing. The scientists say we emerged as human beings in roughly our present form 200,000 years ago. It took 200,000 years before we reached a population of 1 billion people. That's how many people we've added in the first 13 years of this century. And we'll add another billion in the next 13 years. And in the 14 years after that, we'll add yet another billion. When I was born, it's a little over 2 billion. I'm not that old. I'm getting on up there, but it's quadrupled in less than a century. And it's going to level off somewhere above 10 billion, I mean. And the cities are growing. It's an urbanization trend that's incredible. And the economic activity is growing so rapidly that it's putting pressure on some key resources like underground water supplies, fresh water, like topsoil. In many areas, my father's generation responded to FDR's challenge to conserve the soil. Well, in many places around the world, including our own Midwest, we're losing topsoil at an unsustainable rate. And our own underground aquifers are going down, many of them several meters a year. It's out of sight, out of mind. And so nothing's being done about it. But with this growth, we've got to do something about it. Now, here's the main point I want to make about growth. Growth has become the holy grail. Every nation's economic policy is focused on bringing growth. Every corporation's business plan is focused on growth. So if growth is just sort of seen as the same thing as progress, growth is good, lack of growth is bad, that's sort of the general assumption. It matters, then, what we mean by growth. What is growth? Well, it turns out that it has a very specific definition. It goes back to the 1930s. And it's all in this book here. A man named Simon Kuznets was one of the economists, and he's the one who got credit for it, who came up with GDP, gross domestic product. And that's our compass. If the GDP's growing, that's a big win. If it's not, we're in trouble. So it's interesting that in 1937 and thereafter, Simon Kuznets said, thank you very much for this honor, but I need to tell you something. Please do not use GDP as a guide for economic policy. Now, why did he say that? Well, he understood it thoroughly, and he pointed out that it leaves out a lot of important things. And if we don't pay attention to what's left out of GDP, we're going to get in trouble. And that's what we did, and we have gotten into trouble. What does it leave out? He called them externalities. It's like George Orwell's memory hole. If something is an externality, you're safe just ignoring it and forgetting about it. And they're negative and positive. Negative externalities include pollution, not on the balance sheet, not in the national accounts, out of sight, out of mind, forget about it. if you can. Well, we can't anymore. There are positive externalities. Here's what that phrase describes. If we invest in music and art and culture and education and mental health care and community centers and family services, that's an expense. When the benefits start rolling back into society with more vibrant communities and better educated young people, that's not measured. That's a positive externality. It's one of the reasons that we in our country are chronically underinvesting in public goods that make life better for everyone. But it doesn't show up on the balance sheet. And so when they put on the green eye shades, let's just cut this out. Well, they're cutting out all the benefits that come back and make the economy stronger as well. What else is missing from our definition of growth? The depletion of the underground water, depletion of topsoil, depletion of minerals. What else? The distribution of income. Now, this is a big one. This is a big one. Because if all of the extra income goes just to the very top, that's counted as a win. GDP's gone up. Hooray. But the middle class isn't cheering about that. And in fact, here are the statistics. Since the Great Recession of 08, not all, 93% of all the extra national income has gone to the top 1%. Now, that's not an Occupy Wall Street slogan. That's reality. And that is what has been happening. We in the United States have an economy today where we are more unequal than either Egypt or Tunisia. And the inequality is growing. The middle class has been struggling. And again, the gains have gone right up to the very top. Now, we can change that, but we have got to have a clear understanding of what we mean by growth so that when we implement our economic policies, we do so in a way that helps the great majority of the people. I'll give you one example that illustrates this, and I'm not picking on this family. It's actually a great family, and just using this example, Sam and Bud Walton founded Walmart, and their heirs in the next generation, between the two of them, they have five children and one daughter-in-law. These six individuals now have a greater combined net worth than 100 million Americans, the bottom third of our country. And again, it's not the Waltons' fault. It's the result of the policies that are producing this pattern. And inequality is growing in Europe, in Japan. Inequality is growing in China, growing in India. And one of the reasons, again, is the emergence of Earth Inc. and outsourcing and robo-sourcing. But it gives us a macroeconomic challenge. And let me explain what I mean by that. Since the early part of the 20th century, since Henry Ford doubled his employees' wages so they could buy the cars they were making, and since mass advertising started stimulating demand, the manufacturing of wants, they called it, we have had a consumer demand economy so that the middle class gets wages and salaries so that they can go to the stores and buy goods and services. And that keeps priming the pump and keeps the economy going. So the consequences of growing inequality and stagnating wages extend beyond just the fact that it offends our sense of fairness and is contrary to what we think our country ought to be like. It also threatens the continued vibrancy of the economy, because if the middle class can't continue providing that demand, then we get into real trouble. And that's beginning to happen.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
If they blow a hole in my backyard, everyone is gonna run away, and the creeks won't flow to the great lake below. Will the water in the well still be okay? If they blow a hole in the backbone, the one that runs across the muscles of the land, oh, we might get a load of stone for the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand. We'll need to build some new apartments, and I know we're gonna have to fix the roads. But if we blow another hole in the escarpment, the water won't flow to the great lake below? Will the water in the well still be okay? We'll keep driving on the blind line. If we don't know where we want to go, even knowledge that sound can get watered down. And truth can get sucked out the car window. Sucked out the car window. We're two-thirds water. What do we really need but sun and shower, soil and sea? We're two-thirds water. The aquifers provide. Deep down in the rock, there's a pearl inside. If they blow a hole in my backyard, everyone is gonna run away, and the creeks won't flow to the great lake below. Will the water in the well still be okay? If they blow a hole in the backbone, the one that runs across the muscles of the land, oh, we might get a load of stone through the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand. Oh, we might get a load of stone through the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand.
Okay, now I'm running over time, so let me go to chapter 5, The Reinvention of Life and Death. One of the most powerful revolutionary drivers of global change is the revolution in biology, genetics, genomics, proteomics, the microbiome, the connectome, the mapping of the human brain, new material sciences, 3D printing, molecular manipulation. We are now acquiring the ability to change the fabric of life itself and to change the makeup of solid matter. Brand new life forms are being created that did not appear in nature. Now, those of us from the South know what kudzu has done. And I'm not saying that any of these little new microscopic critters are like kudzu, because these technologists say, oh, it's safe, we've got it under control. And I'm sure they do. But we need to pay attention to some of these trends. Anybody here have any spider goats? I didn't think so. I just wanted to get your attention because I want to tell you about spider goats. Spider silk, if you have enough of it, is incredibly valuable. Stronger than steel, has all the qualities that spider silk has. But you can't get much of it you can't farm spiders. They're aggressive and cannibalistic, and those are only two of the reasons why I don't want to farm spiders. But here's what you can do, and they're doing it. You can take orb-weaving spiders and take their genes and splice them into goats and get spider goats. And they look like goats, but they secrete the spider silk through their udders with their milk. Everybody okay with that? Somebody said creepy. Creepy is not fear. Creepy is kind of pre-fear. Something going on, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? But it might be something we need to worry about. Well, in truth, there are so many magnificent blessings coming our way out of this life sciences revolution. Cures for diseases that have caused suffering since time immemorial. Alleviation of conditions that we never imagined that. Just yesterday, they announced a new device that can help some blind people begin to see by sending the signals straight to the brain. And there's so many wonderful things. But Again, we need to participate in making choices about how we're going to use these new powers. We're now in charge of evolution. And it's hard for us to think of evolutionary timescales, but we're now in charge of it. What will happen when parents are given, as they will be in some countries, maybe here, the ability to pick traits that they'd like to see in their children? Hair color, eye color. You want to dial the intelligence up? Well, parents are competitive, and so are nations. And China has announced its determination to be the world's genetic engineering superpower. And I describe in this book what they're doing. It's mind-blowing. And matching children with the professions they may be genetically most inclined to do well in. Trying to isolate genes that will be markers for more intelligence. We've already seen modifications with pharmaceuticals. You know, it's a national challenge for us. How many of these young kids feel like they have to take concentration enhancing medications to compete in school? What happens when there's a genetic way to do that? And more specifically, one of the things that's caused us problems in economic policy is the focus on short-term objectives at the expense of the long-term. If we take that approach to these genetic choices and we focus on short-term gains with genetic modifications, not taking into account what the long-term evolutionary effects could be, that wouldn't be a good thing. So we've got to accelerate the accumulation of sufficient wisdom to make the incredibly challenging choices that now lie ahead of us. Now, finally, and I'll take the shortest amount of time on this one, the sixth driver of global change. You'd be surprised if a book by me didn't have as one of the six drivers of change the climate crisis, and it does. And it is the biggest challenge that we face. Earth, Inc. depends on carbon-based fossil fuels for 85% of all the energy that's used. And when you burn fossil fuels, you put global warming pollution into the atmosphere, and it traps heat. It obeys the laws of physics, and you can't amend the laws of physics. And we now put, every single day, we put 90 million tons of global warming pollution up there as if the atmosphere is an open sewer. Back in the late 19th century, a man named John Snow discovered how cholera was caused. And in London, he mapped the cases of cholera, used to be such a big killer, and overlaid it on the map of the city's sewer system and traced them all to a single pump on Broad Street. And not long after that, Pasteur discovered that bacteria was causing the problem. Well, they connected the dots. We've been putting all this pollution into the atmosphere as if it's a sewer, and the aggregate amount that of man-made global warming pollution that's up there now traps enough extra heat every day to equal the energy in 400,000 Hiroshima atomic bombs going off every day. Now, it's a big planet, but that's a lot of energy. And we can now connect the dots. Look at 2012, last year, here in our country. It was the hottest year ever measured in the United States. We had those giant fires out west and in the southeast. We had the worst outbreak of West Nile virus ever, 48 of the 50 states. In one community in Texas, the police department put out a public appeal for people to stop dialing 911 when they got a mosquito bite. That's true. We had 61% of the country in deep drought, and parts of Georgia still in drought. 1 million head of cattle driven out of Texas. Nobody expects them to ever return. Half of the North Polar ice cap melted last summer. The jet stream's getting all haywire. $110 billion of climate-related disaster damage in this country last year. And Superstorm Sandy, devastating Lower Manhattan and New Jersey. Back when I put out my movie, probably the single most common criticism I heard was from people who said, oh, look, he showed an animation of the seawater going into the World Trade Center Memorial site. How irresponsible is that? Well, it happened at the end of last October, way ahead of schedule. And in spite of the fact that we had all these climate-related disasters in a year when we had more presidential campaign debates than ever in any campaign in history, not one single reporter asked one single question of any of the candidates in any of the debates about the climate crisis. That's pathetic. As a commentary on the quality of the Democratic discourse, oh, we've got the logo when the cruise ship is coming back in to port, And we've got the special logo and the wall-to-wall coverage when a rogue cop is being hunted. And, of course, that's news. We understand that. But we need to address this climate crisis. It's way past time to do so. Now, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, all six of these drivers of global change are happening simultaneously. And we, as human beings, and we particularly as citizens of the United States of America, have a lot of work to do. If the future is a priority, if we care about the world that we are handing off to our children and grandchildren, we've got decisions to make. We've got choices that we need to confront. We've got opportunities to develop and seize. I'm an optimist, and I'm more optimistic after researching and writing this book. But my optimism is based on the assumption that we as human beings have the capacity to rise to big challenges. And now is such a time. Lincoln said, as our case is new, we must think anew. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. We must disenthrall ourselves, and then we will save our country. Thrall is a Norse word describing a form of voluntary slavery. We need to free ourselves from outdated ideas that are holding us back. Aristotle wrote, "The end of a thing defines its nature." Should we, God forbid, fail to rise to this challenge, and we see these sweeping changes just bring about the end of civilization, what would that say about our nature? Who are we as human beings? Are we just destined to be proof that the combination of an opposable thumb and the neocortex was a big mistake? Are we destined to destroy our own future? I refuse to believe it. I refuse to accept it. I believe in humanity. I believe in our Creator. I believe in our capacity to make the future what it should be and to make it worthy of our children. Thank you very much for coming here today. I appreciate it.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
And now for something completely different.